Order. We have three bills on the agenda this afternoon, and we're going to try and get through all of them because we have a lengthy agenda tonight, and I know we lost half an hour of our scheduled hearing time because of floor session. So we'll move ahead. We're not racing through this, but people try and keep testimony as brief as they can. Senator Lori, welcome to the committee for Senate File 9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm glad to be here with Senate File 9, the Minnesota Health Security Act. I did check. Looks like we have an A1 amendment in our packets there. I'd like to move that first. It's an author's amendment to bring it into shape.
Senator Lori moves A1 amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, just in terms of timing for it and all, I'd like to kind of give a brief overview of what the bill does, get into the details, step you through it, and then I'll bring in the supporters of the bill. We'll get through the testimony, open it up for questions, hope to have plenty of time to address any concerns people have. This is really a long-term vision bill for a comprehensive, affordable health care system for all Minnesotans, starting with kids, right quick. I'll just tell a few of the statistics we're all painfully aware of on this committee. We have about 400,000 uninsured in Minnesota today. About 80,000 of those are kids. One thing that's often surprising is that over 90% of those kids without insurance have parents that are working. I mean, this is really a problem for all Minnesotans, and we need to work together to do all we can. Again, this is an effort of over 350,000 Minnesotans, a coalition representing over 350,000 Minnesotans, bringing this healthcare vision forward. Uninsurance and underinsurance problems are driving families and businesses to ruin with alarming frequency. Over half of the foreclosures are caused by healthcare bills. Over half of the bankruptcies are also have a large healthcare bill behind them, and over two-thirds of those were people who were insured at the time the bankruptcy was initiated. The health consequences are dire. Uninsured children are more than five times more likely to have a need for medical care go unmet than their insured counterparts. These also bring, of course, moral dilemmas that we all need to grapple with. And all of these issues that we want to work on together are current in a system where we spend over 16% of our GDP on health care. This is just absolutely unacceptable. This is more than half the next highest country and industrialized country, what they spend. It's over twice the average of all other industrialized countries, and we don't have the health outcomes to justify this level of spending. We need another way, and we need to work together again. So that coalition is important and has worked hard on moving this bill forward. And so, again, I'm glad to be here. I'll step through the provisions of the bill quickly and then bring in my supporters. Section 1 creates the Minnesota Health Security Account. Section 2 is that the chapter may be cited as the Minnesota Health Security Act. Section 3 is definitions. Section 4 requires the Commissioner of Human Service to establish the Minnesota Health Security Program, and it requires the Commissioner to streamline all existing health care programs and apply for all federal waivers that are necessary. Section 5 describes the eligibility. Subdivision 1 saying that if the child meets eligibility requirements, they are eligible to enroll. Subdivision 2 requires a child to be a resident and clarifies that a child who moves to Minnesota to obtain medical treatment is not eligible. Subdivision 3 states that enrollment in this program is voluntary and that parents and guardians can retain private coverage if they so choose. Section 6 of the bill states that the services covered include all those covered under today's medical assistance. This does include mental health, dental, and vision coverage, by the way, important components. Section 7 specifies that under this program there are no enrollee premiums or cost-sharing requirements. Section 8 describes application procedures. Subdivision 1 of that is regarding the locations. Subdivision 2 says that the commissioner has to determine eligibility within 30 days of receiving the application. Subdivision 3 puts up a 12-month eligibility renewal. Subdivision 4 establishes a 30-day retro period if the applicant would have been eligible for medical assistance at the time the care was provided. Section 9 describes the service delivery options. It authorizes the commissioner to contract with HMOs, county-based purchasing plans, and that they may contract with providers on a fee-for-service basis as well. Subdivision 2 states the requirements for participation by plans. Paragraph 1 authorizes the requirements is that the plan would have to authorize and arrange for the provision of all needed health services, with the exception of the home and community-based waiver programs. Paragraph 2 requirement is that they must accept the payment. The paragraph 3 is that they may contract with health care and social service providers to provide services. And paragraph 4 institutes an enrollee grievance procedure. Subdivision 3 sets up a grievance procedure under the fee-for-service option. The new Section 10 put in on the A1 amendment is for services with disabled children, stating that they can continue to receive services in the way that they've been doing it. Paragraph 1 of that, subdivision 1, is for the fee-for-service option for the home and community-based waivers. Subdivision 2 is for the those receiving services under the Minnesota Disability Health Options Program. And Section 3 are for those disabled with a blindness or disability to opt for the fee-for-service basis, as they do today. Section 10, well, the new Section 11, I guess, requires that the commissioner, in consultation with the health care actuary, establish the method and amount of payments for service. That's going to need a bit of work as we move forward. That's an issue that will have to be worked out. The new Section 12 provides for consumer assistance. Subdivision 1 requires the commissioner to assist applicants in choosing a health company, health plan. Subdivision 2 requires the commissioner to designate an ombudsperson to advocate. Section 12 in the original bill, 13 under the amendment, would add the monitoring and evaluation of quality and cost. The next section, Section 13, requires the commissioner to seek all federal waivers. Section 14 requires the commissioner of human service to develop an implementation plan. Section 16 in the A1 amendment that we adopted requires the state to expand the universal health care to all adults based on 5 criteria. The health care must be affordable, defined as not to exceed 5% of family income, comprehensive benefit set, breadth and choice of providers, enrollment must be simple and seamless, and improving health outcomes of enrollees and reducing disparities has to be a priority as we move to all Minnesotans. Section 17, also on the A1 amendment, sets up for an independent actuarial analysis commissioned by the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access to study this and other options for how to deliver healthcare in the most cost-effective and beneficial way for Minnesotans. So that is a quick step through of the bill. Again, our long-term vision for health care for all Minnesotans, comprehensive, affordable health care for all Minnesotans. With that, I would ask Mary Catherine Ricker, the president of St. Paul Federation of Teachers.
Ms. Ricker, welcome to the committee. Questions from the committee for Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before we hear the testimony, can maybe Senator Lori, if you could, just some clarification on a couple of points in your bill as you described it. On page 2 in the eligibility section, paragraph C of section 5, subdivision 2, you say a child moved to Minnesota primarily obtained medical treatment is not eligible. How is that to be determined?
Well, I believe this is something that we do. I'd ask counsel for some help on that. I believe that we've done this before in other provisions. The children that move primarily for benefits that we offer in Minnesota, I believe there's a way to.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Lori, one of the reasons I'm asking is that I've heard different things. I don't know if they're true or not, that people come here to take advantage of the benefits we provide, and I don't know how you would determine this. I don't think anybody will come here and make a statement saying, well, I came to get benefits. I don't think anybody would. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who this excludes, I guess, is my question. Who does it exclude, and how do we determine who those exclusions are?
That's a very good question. It is our intent that we find a way to make sure that we don't have that, you know, flood into Minnesota just for this purpose.
And, well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Lori,
if you had some suggestions about how we could go about that.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I don't know how you would. That's my question. I don't know how you'd do this. I think if you ask people, no one would say yes. That's why I came. And I don't know if you ask the children. Obviously, that's probably not what the intent is. But I guess I think that if this provision is going to remain in the bill, I think you have to have some definition of maybe it's a time limit. Maybe it's I don't know. I just think that as this is stated, I don't think it really can exclude anyone because I don't know that the mechanism exists to determine that.
Senator Hand, these kind of things are always little. I mean, it's hard to determine that, and the commissioner obviously has a difficult job in trying to do that, but I think that...
Well, Mr. Chairman, would this be discretionary then for the commissioner to make a determination of who came that, and in their judgment it was primarily for that reason they could be excluded, or...
And I assume that they would try and set up a method of determining that, and if somebody challenged it, they could end up in court.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple other questions, and I just will let that one sit here for a bit. But in the following paragraph, Senator Lori, say children who are not eligible for medical assistance due to immigration status are eligible for health care coverage under this act. What is the reason for that?
Well, the reason for that is that we're talking about all Minnesota kids. And the public health consequences of having distinctions is dire. These are kids that go to school with Minnesota kids. They play on the playground. We need health for all kids in Minnesota, and that's what our proposal is.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, and Senator Lori, part of the reason for that is I think that presents almost a direct conflict with the previous paragraph. If you're defining Minnesota kids as anybody who's in the state at the time they need health care, then that's what it is, and then paragraph C would not be workable. But if you're talking about citizens and then some kind of residency definition, well, then you're talking about some other things. But as it sits, I'm not sure that I understand how that structure is to work. But you may not. Maybe that's something that needs to be worked on as this goes forward.
Mr. Chair, it may need some work. The one, but I think that you make a good point that we have to make sure that we cover all kids. I lost my train of thought. I had a good response. Let me think. we need to keep working on this. Oh, yeah, residency is not defined as simply in the state, you know, and we do have some residency history of working on that. I mean, I think that one thing is they need to intend to live here under current law. I mean, we need to distinguish between residency and in the state. And in my mind, they are different things. And so when you said that, you know, just because somebody is in the state, they'd be covered under this. I guess I would work with counsel and with the department about how they might interpret these and try to get that more clearly delineated.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Lori, I guess I think that you need to have some way to define that, I think, in the bill. We're calling it the Minnesota Health Security Account. I'm assuming it's a pretty good deal that we're offering, and if it's intended for Minnesota residents or Minnesota citizens or however you want to define that, there has to be some structure in place, and I think paragraph C and D, to be operable, have to somehow fit into larger criteria. I do have one other question, Mr. Chairman, quickly on just clarification, and that would be on section 16 of your amendment, lines 26 and 27, 1.26, 1.27. Talking about a guarantee that the family share premium costs and cost sharing in total does not exceed 5%. What was the reason for the 5%? How did that number get established?
Well, that's a good benchmark for affordability. We try to work with families in terms of how they can structure their income and allocate it to the necessities of living. And 5%, you know, right now, there's over a million Minnesotans that are spending over 10% of their income, and they're the ones that are really bearing the brunt of this. Actually, there's 240,000 spend more than 25% of their income currently. I don't have the study information that 5% is the exact magic number, but 10% is crushing those million Minnesotans. 25% is absolutely putting the 240,000 Minnesotans in dire situations. They're the ones that are losing their homes and going bankrupt. So, you know, we can work on the 5% too. I don't know that that is the absolute magic number, but it's something pretty close to there if you start looking at what a family can fit into their budget.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Lori, do you know what the percentage of income that is spent by all Minnesotans on premium costs and cost sharing? I mean, what's the average number? Is that known?
I don't have that number at my disposal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. A couple more questions, and then we'll go to witnesses. Senator Fischbach and then Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, I guess I'm just wondering about the funds, the mechanism to fund the account. It says that they're going to create a special revenue fund in the state treasury. And then on the second page, it talks about that no funding from existing health care programs can be used. And then it talks about streamlining all the existing health care programs for children. So you're asking for just a direct appropriation to be put in the special revenue account. Is that correct? That's the way I understand
that's
it.
That's a piece of it, but a lot of the current funds that are used for supporting the public programs right now would also need to be used. I mean, this would, you know, reduce the costs there, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't have to go out and raise the revenues for this whole thing without ever taking into account some of the monies that we already use. And so mechanically, as we roll this out, we would be working with the Department of Human Services in conjunction to try to figure out exactly how we structure the rollout of moving this forward.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, but it says no funding from existing health care programs for children in Minnesota may be diverted for purposes.
That's right. That's saying that we don't want to have to go out and support this with all new revenues.
Okay.
There's revenues in existing programs that are going to be freed up. We don't want to go fix potholes with those and have to build a whole new financing mechanism for healthcare. There's healthcare funding already that does some of this, and we need to work with DHS to make sure that we don't take healthcare funding, go fill potholes, and put a burden on the Health Security Act to go find a whole new revenue stream to support the entirety of the program there. That's what we're trying to get at in those paragraphs. Does that help?
And then, Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, I know this is policy, but I was just curious. There is a blank appropriation. What kind of dollars are you looking for?
Well, we need to get the fiscal note on this. It is the policy committee, and we look forward to finding out what the department's thoughts are in terms of what this would cost and looking at how we structure the revenue to support it. And so that is a blank appropriation right now, and I'm not able to fill it in.
Okay. And one final.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lori, I was happy to see that you changed that section 15 and 16,
mm-hmm.
but I still have to wonder, the state of Minnesota shall insure. How do we do that, I guess? I realize there's a whole bunch of criteria that this has to be, that this affordable health care by January 1st has to be consistent with, but it seems like maybe the bill would travel easier in a separate bill, and I guess shall insure seems pretty vague to me, that we may not be able to actually figure out what that means in statute. So I think it was an improvement, though, mm-hmm. over the old way.
Okay. The intent there is, you know, and again, we have the actuarial analysis to take a look at how the kids portion is rolling out. We have a lot of work already in the hopper for looking at different universal health care mechanisms. This is really, you know, I hope to hold the legislature and the governor's feet to the fire and find a way to do universal health care in Minnesota. And, that's my sincere hope.
Thank you.
Senator Hand, the language you had about the immigration status one, its residency is defined in Subdivision 2 of the federal code. We just looked it up. It's fairly lengthy, but it spells out who is and who is not a resident of a state. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Lori. I was going to point that section out, so that's good. And then in response partially to Senator Fischbach's comments, but also to support your work, Senator Lori, particularly on line 2.6. I just wanted to point out I appreciate that you are calling on the commissioner to streamline all of those existing health care programs for children. There needs to be, as you've pointed out, a very concerted effort to do that. Sometimes we tend to, you know, we've built up this system or this menu, and to me this is suggesting that we're going to take a look at all of those various components and see how they fit into this, into one system.
Right.
And that very much needs to be done, and I think that it is prudent that you spelled that out in here. So thank you.
I'm ready to go ahead with your witnesses. Ms. Rickert, go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Catherine Ricker, and I am a teacher currently serving as president of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers. I also sit on the board of Take Action Minnesota, and I'm a partner with the Make Health Happen campaign. My local union has endorsed both the Minnesota Health Security Act and the Minnesota Health Plan locally. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today to talk about the Minnesota Health Security Act specifically. First, nationally, recent polls have shown us that you very well know that public support for health care reform has grown substantially. A November 2008 poll published in the New England Journal of Medicine found that 7 of 10 registered voters agree that major changes are needed in the health care system in the United States. The Make Health Happen campaign is working to translate this desire for change into action. We are bringing people together from across Minnesota who have diverse experiences with our healthcare system. But we have a shared commitment for working for change. We include educators whose students are struggling with untreated medical conditions because their parents can't afford coverage. We include healthcare workers who work long, grueling shifts and then cannot afford to bring their own sick children to the very hospital where they work. And we include urban and suburban families who have lost jobs in healthcare with the recent economic downturn, as well as family farmers, including those members of the Land Stewardship Project, who struggle to find affordable healthcare on their own. However, together, this partnership, we believe that comprehensive, affordable healthcare for everyone in Minnesota is necessary and achievable. I'm here to support the Minnesota Health Security Act because I believe this legislation charts a much-needed path for healthcare reform. As Senator Lori described, the Minnesota Health Security Act ensures that every child in Minnesota will have access to healthcare and calls for broad standards for ensuring healthcare for all adults. This legislation offers an important path toward affordable and comprehensive healthcare for everyone in our state. As a teacher, I know firsthand how important the Minnesota Health Security Act is to the future success of students in our state. Lack of health coverage places major barriers to learning in front of our children. Students without health coverage are more likely to come to school with untreated asthma, poorly treated diabetes, and even communicable diseases. They struggle to learn, they spend more time in the nurse's office instead of my classroom, and they miss more days of school. As educators, we know that children learn best when they and their classmates are healthy. The Minnesota Health Security Act would ensure that our children receive the health care they need so we can focus on giving them the best possible education. Bless you. The Obama administration has now put health care reform back at the table at the federal level. This week and next, members of Congress will make key decisions about the amount of funding dedicated to health care reform. So why be here today? Because this growing attention to federal reform actually makes our efforts in Minnesota more, not less, important. Because Minnesota has a long history of leadership on health care reform. We must continue to contribute concrete policy ideas and demonstrate momentum for this reform in order to support federal debate. And since the federal reform discussion is still at its initial stages, it's critical that we continue to move forward on all fronts to address the urgent health care needs of families right here in Minnesota. Finally, I would just like to take a moment to comment on the stark contrast between the future we envision for health care in Minnesota and the proposal put forward specifically by Governor Pawlenty. Governor Pawlenty's initial budget proposal would cut over 100,000 people off health care in Minnesota, and his supplemental proposal only delays these cuts. These deep cuts will eventually, inevitably, leave Minnesota and our students weaker and sicker once the recession passes. We believe we can do better. We believe we should strive for a stronger and healthier Minnesota. The Minnesota Health Security Act put forward an alternative vision: affordable, accessible health care for everyone in our state. I would like to express my appreciation to Senator Lurie for his hard work and his strong leadership on this issue. I would respectfully ask for your support on this legislation, and I really thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Ms. Ricker. And I'll ask members of the committee, unless there are specific questions you need to ask right now, maybe we'll go through all the witnesses first. So, Ms. Spector, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carol Spector, and I am the Advocacy and Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. Ensuring that all children have access to affordable, quality health care coverage is one of CDF Minnesota's highest priorities, and that is why I'm very happy to be here today to talk about the Minnesota Health Security Act, which would ensure all Minnesotans have access to affordable health care coverage starting with children. I think all of us in the room know that we are facing a health care crisis. Some of those points have already been raised in the discussion. And I believe that all of us share the same end goal, and that's access to affordable health care coverage for all Minnesotans. So today I want to talk about the ailing health care system and the Minnesota Health Security Act as a solution. With the unemployment rate topping 8% and the recession-related job losses projected to reach 120,000 by next year, tens of thousands of Minnesotans are losing their health care coverage with their jobs. The latest unemployment trends are making it increasingly clear that the current health care system, an employer-based coverage system, is not sustainable. The economy is only exacerbating an already broken health care system. Senator Lurie mentioned the number of uninsured Minnesotans, 374,000 total, with nearly 80,000 of them children. But it's really important to point out that these numbers, which are the most recent numbers, do not capture the current economic downturn and the likely jump that we are of uninsured that we are expected to see related to job losses. As healthcare costs skyrocket, employers can no longer carry the burden of healthcare coverage. And as a result, many employers are either eliminating coverage for their employees or passing more of the cost on to their employees. The underinsurance problem in Minnesota and across the nation is very real. In Minnesota, as Senator Lurie mentioned before, a staggering 240,000 Minnesotans spend more than 25% of their income on health care. COBRA is cost prohibitive for many, and our public health care programs, while excellent programs, have become riddled with cost and administrative barriers that make it very difficult for hardworking Minnesotans to access coverage. And I also want to mention one disturbing trend that is a more recent trend that is coming to light. And based on the way coverage is structured, dependent care coverage is so much more than employee-only coverage that what we're seeing, and there are now national studies to show this, that employees, a parent, can afford to cover themselves, but the additional cost to add their child might be another $200 or $300 a month, and parents are put in the excruciating situation of having to choose to cover themselves but not being able to cover their children because they can't afford the cost. I'll be brief on the benefits of insuring Minnesotans. Senator Lordy already mentioned some of them. Children are just going to be healthier. They're going to have their health care needs met. He mentioned that uninsured children are 5 times more likely to have an unmet need. But it's also very important for the health care system as a whole. Uninsured children are 4 times more likely than insured children to use the ER. And more than half of people overall with inadequate health care coverage and 2/3 who are uninsured skip needed medical care. So this really is about long-term health as well as the health of the entire health care system. Children with coverage get important checkups and immunizations, and there are studies that show they do better in school, and they have fewer long-term health problems. They miss less school, and this is just going to produce a more productive workforce in the long term. As I've mentioned briefly, we all pay for uninsurance and underinsurance and uncompensated care, and these costs are absorbed in the healthcare system, and it's one of the factors in the skyrocketing healthcare costs. So the Minnesota Health Security Act is a solution. The Minnesota Health Security Act would, as Senator Lori mentioned, create systemic change, simplify existing public programs, and streamline them. And this would address 2 problems. It would address the fact that many uninsured children are currently eligible for public programs but are not accessing them, often due to barriers, both administrative and cost, sometimes due to lack of awareness. And the simplicity of this bill would help get all of those children covered. And it would also address the ailing healthcare system for the middle class, the average person who's facing losing their healthcare coverage right now due to cost. And another trend that I didn't mention is often employers also cut back on benefits. So that is another form of underinsurance, in effect not being able to access the needed care. Mm-hmm. So this bill would create the systemic change that would address all of those issues. We are very cognizant of the deficit and the difficult task of balancing the budget that you are facing, but we do contend that it is taking no action that we cannot afford. Ensuring that all Minnesotans have access to affordable, comprehensive health care coverage will go a long way towards stabilizing our economy and will create a sustainable health care system. Our current health care system is a lottery. It just depends on where you work and how much you earn, whether or not you have access to good coverage. And what this bill does is it creates a paradigm shift, a new vision for health care that would be more like public education for children. All children would have access to coverage, just like they have a guarantee for a public education. And no parent would have to make that agonizing decision of not being able to cover their child because they can't afford it. The Minnesota Health Security Act would build on the health care reform progress made last year and complete the discussion by ensuring affordable coverage for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spector.
Jeannie Sedgwick. Yep.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jean Sedgwick, and I am proud to be a school nurse in St. Paul Public Schools, and I was honored this year to have been chosen as the Minnesota School Nurse of the Year. I am here today representing the St. Paul Federation of Teachers and the School Nurses of Minnesota. In a society that pledges to leave no child behind, we are not doing a very good job at keeping these very same children from falling behind with their health care coverage. We need to be there to help them be healthy and stay in school so they can achieve academic success. For many of our children, the school nurse is their primary health service professional. School nurses across Minnesota believe that children who are uninsured and underinsured are the number one challenge that they face daily. This is the priority issue for the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. There are, as we have heard, over 80,000 children in Minnesota without health care. This number is growing as their parents continue to lose jobs in record numbers. I'm sure that you've all heard these numbers. We've listened this morning to this as well. What I would like to do is just share a few stories that put faces on these numbers. These are actual children that we have seen every single day and continue to see. We have a 14-year-old seventh grader that was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes last April. His mother works as a housekeeper but cannot afford the family coverage. This student has missed school and misses insulin, and the school nurse has to get supplies from doctors because the child cannot afford the insulin. He often takes less insulin to make it last. He does not test his blood glucose levels except at school because he has no strips at home. The family cannot afford to pay for this out of pocket. He did have MA for 4 months while he was under child protection, but now child protection will no longer pay for the MA. His mom has applied for Minnesota Care, but they are still waiting. He is having increased behavior issues at school that may be related to his fluctuating glucose levels, and he is also at higher risk of health complications later in life due to the poor control that he is experiencing now with the diabetes. We also have a 17-year-old whose mom is working in the schools as an educational assistant but cannot afford the family health coverage. This student missed a lot of school related to her diabetes and lack of medication and glucose testing strips and supplies. She just dropped out of school this past winter break. We have a 9-year-old who was prescribed a medication to help treat his ADHD. He was actually showing great improvement in school until his mom lost her job and can no longer afford his medication. He is now having great difficulty focusing and completing his schoolwork and showing signs of depression because of the work failure. In addition to these kids and all our kids with chronic health concerns such as diabetes, asthma, seizures, and ADHD, we have the kids who have dental caries and whose parents cannot afford to take them to the dentist. These kids often come to school in pain. They are physically present, but they are unable to concentrate and learn. We have kids that have ear infections and sinus infections. They miss school, and when they do come, they are not able to hear well enough to benefit from the education that they need, the education that would help prepare them for well-paying jobs and would allow them to purchase insurance when they grow up. We have a cycle of failure that we are perpetuating. If we do not take care of our children today, they will not be able to be productive citizens tomorrow. The school nurses of Minnesota support this legislation. Our children, our students, deserve this legislation. This act would provide comprehensive care coverage for our kids, dental, vision, medical. It is important that we pass the Minnesota Health Security Act this session. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. On behalf of the school nurses of Minnesota, I extend an invitation to each one of you to visit the schools that are in your district and to see firsthand what is happening to our children. Thank you.
Ms. Sedgwick, before you leave, real quickly, I just had a question to the 14-year-old with diabetes type 1. You said he gets test strips, the only place he gets them is at
school.
So during summer, it's just no testing.
Exactly. And on weekends and holidays and evenings. Yes.
Thank you. Your next witness.
Mr. Chair, I've got one more. Reverend Sarah Campbell. We've skipped around a little bit because we're running over schedule. So we had a small employer who really wanted to talk and a parent and a grandparent, but we're going to try to summarize and be respectful of time. So Reverend Sarah Campbell.
All right. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Campbell, and I am the senior minister of Mayflower Community Church in South Minneapolis, a congregation of over 600 members. As a religious leader, I help to shape a community that works to sustain the health of individuals and of society through charitable giving and through the spiritual and ethical formation of my congregants. My work includes the standard activities of religious leaders, pastoral care, worship leadership, seeding acts of charity, but something new is happening. Let me tell you how my work has been changing over the last several months. People in my congregation are losing their jobs. Every week, another job is lost. An architect, an engineer, a manager, a Target, the list goes on, and along with the job, of course, is the loss of health insurance coverage for their families and for their children. Now, children, as in so many congregations, are at the center of our life at Mayflower. After I baptize a baby, I carry the baby through the sanctuary, and the congregation sings our special song, Child of Wonder. We watch them with adoring and protective eyes as they grow from baby to chubby toddler to string bean grade schooler to gangly preteen. We watch them week after week through the years, coming forward for the children's sermon and singing in the children's choirs, playing in the courtyard. So when we hear the news that these children, our Mayflower children, are losing their health care coverage, it triggers that mother bear impulse in all of us, all 600 of us. This new phenomenon in the life of our church is angering us. It is energizing us. It is inciting us to organize. I believe that you will see more of my parishioners and congregants from other communities, religious communities, at the Capitol this year. More and more of us will be coming out to speak powerfully. Many are here today. You see, at Mayflower, we promise to celebrate one another's joys and bear one another's burdens. And so when one of our families is suddenly without health care coverage, all of us feel a collective righteous indignation worthy of the prophet Isaiah. Prayers and pastoral support are crucial, but they are not enough. It is time for religious leaders to stir up their people and get them organized, because we all know, that it does not have to be this way. And it is time for Minnesota lawmakers to support this bold new legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Campbell.
We have one parent who came a ways away. We'll try to do one more.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm a little nervous. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kim Anderson, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell my story. I am a wife, a mother, and a student. I am here to tell you why passing the Minnesota Security Act is urgently needed by Minnesota families like mine. At the end of 2007, I lost my job, and with it, the family health insurance coverage that came with it. After losing my job, I was able to go back to school full-time while my husband worked overtime. We were able to continue providing for our family, but without having insurance coverage. While we had the opportunity to enroll with his company's health care insurance plan, the family premiums were unaffordable. Ever since losing our health insurance coverage, we have been lucky to have had no major illnesses in our family that required us to go to the doctor, but we don't think we'll be lucky forever. Our family, as well as so many other families in Minnesota, would benefit by having the Minnesota Health Security Act passed so that we too can have affordable health insurance. Currently, my husband works two full-time jobs, and I am still in school. Even though my husband works two full-time jobs, we cannot afford the hit to our income by paying the high cost of family premiums every month. The only way we could provide health care coverage for our children is if my husband quit working and we went on assistance. We do not want to do that, obviously. With the continuing rising cost of living expenses, we just recently moved in with family. And like many across the state, we are a family that makes too much money to qualify for state assistance, but too little money to afford the ever-rising costs of private health coverage. We're stuck in the middle, and it's very frustrating. This Friday, I graduate with my diploma, but I'm choosing to stay in school due to the current job market. While I am able to receive unemployment compensation, our family has to forego health care coverage. We are trying to do the best we can to provide for our family, but it is increasingly difficult, and we have no way to give our children the health care they need. By passing the Minnesota Health Security Act, I know countless hardworking families like mine would get the health care coverage they need and the peace of mind that comes with it. I ask you to please pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Anderson. Thank you for coming up here for the testimony. And Senator Lori, perhaps the business owner who you would wanted to have testify, if he has
that
testimony
would be great.
Or whatever.
I mean, if we have time, it's okay. Powerful story. The business owner.
Like 2 minutes?
2 minutes. for Dave Sumnicht.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Sumnicht. I live in Richfield. I'm not sure that my story is powerful, but I hope it's meaningful. I've operated Advantage Payroll in Edina and provided health insurance for my employees as a fully paid benefit since I started the company. It's been my commitment to completely cover the employees' cost of health and dental insurance since I started employing staff that work more than 30 hours a week. Over the years, this has made insurance coverage affordable for my employees' families and given them the opportunity to even add children to their coverage who would not have been otherwise covered. Originally, in order to have enough participants to qualify, I included myself in the employee pool, even though I could get less expensive coverage under my wife's work plan. In the past 6 years, I've dropped my coverage and returned to my wife's plan in the face of annual increases ranging from 25 to 33% per year in the cost of the plan. This is the way I could keep the commitment I made to cover my employees without requiring an employee contribution. In an environment of bailouts and huge tax breaks for mega banks and companies that are laying off thousands of employees, small businesses who have been able to maintain their business and commitment to employees see this legislation as a way to keep our workforce healthy and intact. The Minnesota Health and Security Act, as you know, is a two-phase bill that will cover everyone starting with children. It would create a public health care option that's free for all children in Minnesota, regardless of income, and affordable for all adults, much like what President Obama has promoted for the nation. Not all small businesses are able to make and keep the commitment to health insurance that I have so far. I'm not sure I can either, actually. This legislation offers some small businesses a way to protect children of their employees' families, and in some cases, keep those families out of financial crisis. Small businesses know their employees on a personal one-on-one basis, and we know when their families need health services. Healthy children need more productive employees. This legislation is not a bailout, but a way to keep health care costs reasonable for the most stable workforce in the state, employees of small businesses. Thank you for your time, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sumnicht, for your testimony. Are there questions from the committee? If not, we have Ms. Commit from the Council on Health Plans. Okay. Yeah, there it is. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. I represent Minnesota's 8 nonprofit health plans. First of all, I just want to say thank you to Senator Lori for bringing this bill forward. We agree with the goal of his bill to ensure that health care coverage is available for all children, and this is a goal that the Council of Health Plans fully supports. In fact, the Council of Health Plans supports universal coverage for all Minnesotans, meaning that all individuals have health coverage. We also support coverage that is affordable and of high quality. Our concern with this proposal today is that by creating a single-payer plan just for children, you make health care coverage even more expensive for the rest of the market. The purpose of insurance is to spread risk across a large group of individuals referred to as a risk pool. The assumption is that this pool will include individuals who use little health care and individuals who consume significant more in health care than is covered by their premiums. If you remove children from the overall risk pool, you will drive up the cost for the rest of the pool because there are now fewer low utilizers left in the pool. One of my health plan members informed me of an analysis that they did based on this bill language of what the premium price impact of the small group market would be for those that they cover in that small group market. And they estimated that the premiums would increase by approximately 15% if children were carved out of the risk pool. So while this proposal would lower the number of uninsured children, which is a good thing, it would significantly increase the cost of coverage, likely resulting in more uninsured adults. We can't settle for a proposal that segments the population into winners and losers. We also have concerns that this bill ignores the ability to pay. And although the bill is voluntary, it is hard to imagine that parents would refuse free health coverage for their children. Given the economic hardship the state is facing, it's hard to imagine that the government can afford to provide services to those who are fully able to provide for themselves. Another concern is that the governor's supplemental budget would get rid of the outreach dollars that are used to help those who already qualify for public programs to help them learn how to enroll. And according to the Department of Health, approximately two-thirds of uninsured Minnesotans already qualify for existing public programs. So if there was some way to proactively get all of those who are already qualified to enroll, this would go a long way to reducing the number of uninsured, both the uninsured children and adults. So the Minnesota Council of Health Plans agrees with the proponents of this legislation that it is unacceptable for any child to go without health coverage, which increases the likelihood that they will not receive the necessary services such as well-child checkups and immunizations. We agree that we need to find solutions that are aimed at lowering the cost of health care so that all Minnesotans have access to high-quality health coverage. This proposal only addresses access, and while that is part of the equation, that we cannot overlook, if we do not address cost, we will never achieve total access for all. So again, we applaud the intent behind this bill, and we support universal coverage for all Minnesotans. We believe that children and adults are deserving of a health care system that covers everyone, is affordable, and provides the highest quality care available. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. Ms. Smith. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber is the largest business advocacy organization in the state. And on behalf of the business community, I'd like to say that we absolutely also support this goal. We just have concerns about the method. We are concerned that not only will this come at a large cost to the state, but that by covering all kids, including non-poverty kids, we will see a large decline in the number of kids that are taken out of the insurance pool. Because why would anyone pay out of pocket when they can go free through the state? The result would, as Ms. Commit already just said, the result would end up, we'd have very, very few or no low-cost, healthy children in the insurance market, and we're concerned that insurance premiums would increase as a result. Many small and medium-sized employers are struggling to offer health insurance due to rising costs and economic hard times we are experiencing. Raising premiums by just a small amount could be a tipping point for many employers to opt out of providing health care to their employees, and we'd have more uninsured adults in the market. We are interested in seeing how this would be funded considering the budget situation. Given that there are no income eligibility limitations to this program, we would raise concerns about expanding a government program to all income levels, particularly at this financial time. With that, I would urge you to vote against Senate File 9. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. I was going to say the last two witnesses both talked about how the rest of the insurance for everyone else would go up. I can see how it would go up per person, but not overall, because you're taking right. some of the people out of it. So it should seem to me, would like for family coverage, for a family, if you're taking the kids out, maybe more per person remaining in it, because that would be an adult. But if taking out the kids, I'd picture it'd be less expensive then.
Right. Mr. Chair, yes. If I could just take a minute, I think that the bill actually really does address more than just the access issue, as was stated. I think that it really would, as Senator Lynch was talking about, be able to provide a more seamless system, one system for all kids to be able to come in, that we would then have the ability to streamline and make sure that that system worked much better than today's really fragmented system that drops too many from coverage. While there may be some incremental increase for individuals, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, if a small employer did have some children in the pool and we pulled those children out, the cost of covering the pool should go down in aggregate, and the kids would have affordable, comprehensive health care outside of that pool and should work. And we're really talking about kind of a paradigm shift in terms of how we provide health care for our children. It's more along the lines of the school model, where we make sure that every child has the right to a public education. And under this model, kids would be able to have health care guaranteed at no cost. And so I think I think the people of Minnesota are expecting us to work on something like this to really fix our health care crisis. And I'm happy to be here and ready for any questions.
Sarah Berglund, Sarah Ann.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lori, I just have a simple request, and that is that even though it doesn't follow the process of our rules, I would like you to request that this bill go to the Tax Committee before it come to the Finance Committee.
It does have to go to Judiciary before that.
I do have
right,
two
but I'm not on the next
stops.
Committee that it goes to.
Senator Berglund, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that. I actually do look forward to the dialogue about how we finance this. It is a critical piece of it, and I understand your desire that we engage in that dialogue before placing it before the Health Policy Committee without that financing mechanism in place. And so I think that is a reasonable request. I can't promise that. I'm a freshman. I don't know all the rules. I don't know where everything goes right off the top of my head and how we move these things. But it does seem like a reasonable request, and I understand your desire that we engage in that discussion about how we finance it before coming to your committee, Madam Chair, and asking to do something that you may not be able to do, even though I know you would love to see us get to a universal health care system.
Senator Hahn.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lori, in hearing the testimony in the bill and reading through it, it doesn't try to get at, or you're not trying in your bill to get at the cost of health care so much as trying to find a way to provide the payment of insurance in some other mechanism. And so the question I have is if the utilization of health care is fundamentally what drives insurance, the more we use and the more expensive kinds of things we do, that drives up the costs, and then the insurance rates have to cover those costs. And since your bill does really nothing to focus on that, you make a statement in your bill that this has to be affordable. And my question is kind of a two-part question. Who determines what is affordable for health care premiums? And how is that determined? And then secondly, if we go through this, and then we find we don't have enough money in the state treasury to pay for that, what then do we do? If you're saying in the bill that we have to pay for it and we don't have money, one of the comments from the testimony we heard was about the governor's proposal to, diminish the rate of increase in the health care costs. And I think that's primarily driven by the fact that there's not revenue. I'm reading this and I'm saying, well, there's an implication here that we making a commitment that we will pay whatever the amount is, whatever that might be. Just trying to understand, is that your intent, is to say that there's going to be some mechanism, some board, or some body that will determine what is an affordable premium in some way, and whatever that is, that will always be paid no matter what? Is that kind of the intent of your bill?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, you had a two-part question. The first was based on a premise that utilization is the sole driver of healthcare spending, and I guess I would take a little bit of issue with that. I mean, there are many factors, and utilization is one of them, but it operates in many different ways. I mean, there's all kinds of improper utilization of our current healthcare system, and there are other ways to get at it. And this does dovetail, so kind of getting at your second point, it dovetails well with the healthcare reforms, building on the healthcare homes. We can begin to exert more administrative oversight of our health plans as we control more of the market there and make sure that things go well. And, in the bill, the affordability piece really is spelled out at 5%. We already did talk about that. That would be the extent of the cost share borne by adults under the 5 criteria laid out for phase two when we move beyond kids. And again, you know, we already talked about that, whether 5% is the magic number or not. It's pretty clear 10% is crushing families, that 25% again is crushing families. 240,000 Minnesotans paying over 25%. And the balance is, you know, we're going to have the discussion about how we finance it, and absolutely that'll, you know, some of these issues will have to be worked out as we move it along.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, and Senator Lori, thank you. I guess I was trying to get a little bit at that, how that rate is determined. We've said in the bill it's 5% right now is affordable. If we find out in coming years that we don't have the revenues to pay for a 5%, would we to 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever money we had, is that, and how is that going to be done? How would that mechanism work? If we don't have the money to preserve a 5% ratio, do we then say we get more revenue, or do we adjust that affordability number? How, and what is the mechanism that you're contemplating here to deal with that, as that issue will certainly faced by us if we adopt this bill?
I think Carol Spector had some thoughts too, but I would think it would work very similar to many programs that we have today, where we'd set a budget, you know, a biennial budget, and we'd figure out based on history what things are going to cost, and we'd have to balance it, and it would be up to us to adjust, you know, what percentage individuals were expected to contribute through the premiums and co-pays and how that worked, and we would hopefully be guided by evidence and the like as to what drives the best choices in healthcare utilization and choices regarding the best route for care. These are all things that we can work on over time, and it would be incumbent upon us here at the legislature to make those adjustments in our budgeting process. Well, but I think Ms. Spector also had some
thoughts. On that
Mr.
point,
Chair,
Senator Prettner-Solin wanted to comment.
To that point, can you imagine the bargaining power that we would have if we had 1 million children in one large pool? Certainly we could help drive down costs. We've already recognized that children are a low-cost consumer of health care. We've taken care of the end, those approaching the end of life through our Medicare system. And now it's time to start covering the rest of the population by starting at the beginning of life. And we're starting here at the lowest-cost consumers of health care. Not only do we have a large pool of people, and it's a low cost consumer, but it also allows us then to negotiate with the federal government for obtaining a waiver to cover children up to 300% of poverty, and to get some federal dollars in exchange for our investment in coverage of children. It also, I think that the best thing about it is the portability. It takes away the angst that parents have about changing jobs at times when they need to make some changes or, you know, go back to school to get some additional training so that they can move on and find some opportunities for better taking care of their family in the future. Healthcare has become a tremendous burden on our population, and by starting to look at incrementally covering the whole population in Minnesota, starting with the lowest cost, we begin to solve that problem.
Senator Han, are you done?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just was trying to get clarification, and if the point is that there really is no guarantee that this affordability is 5%. If we don't have the money, it might be set at 25% or whatever the money we have. That's the point I was trying to get at. Is that what we're saying, is that just because we say 5% for purposes of this bill, if in the future we don't have money, that rate will be set at whatever we can afford, which may in fact be a 25% or whatever the finances will allow. Am I correct in assuming that? Or are you going to say that there is a certain point that we will stick on, never change, and just dedicate ourselves to getting the revenues to pay that no matter what it is?
Mr. Chair, I don't think I get to say in statute that this is going to be a limit forever. I mean, I think that it is always up to us. Anything, you know, that I convince my colleagues to buy into is subject to somebody else, convincing them of something else in another session. And so this will be a matter that we will continually look at. And yeah, 5% might not be the magic number again, but...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prittner-Sullen and Senator Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But we do know it's going to be lower cost than what we have right now. Anytime you put everybody into a large pool and provide services, it will always be less than what we're paying currently. We cut down on administrative costs. We're able to negotiate better. There's the advantage of having the large pool in terms of driving down the cost.
Senator Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that this point about the 5%, first of all, I mean, this is about studying and developing recommendations. And I think it's much like what we're doing right now with, you know, finding out how we're going to balance our budget. And we've been talking about cost savings, and yet we've got no goal. We're just going to save some money. Let's cut costs. Let's figure out how we're going to provide more access. Now let's put down instead a number. Let's have a goal that we're going to go for and find out a way to make recommendations to hit that goal. And how do we determine 5%? Well, go back to the families. You know, I think what we talk about is a lot of the unions that have been working on this issue. Ask their members, what can you afford? What do you think is an affordable number that you could work into your budget if we were to, you know, for health care? And so 5% is a good number to start with. Maybe that's not the end number, but you have to start someplace. And start to make your recommendations based on that number. If we can't achieve that, well, then we'll know that based on the way the studies. But if we have no number there, we don't know what we're going to try to achieve because we don't have a goal then. So I think this is where we need to start. And we're working from backwards, moving forwards. That's why this is in here.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lori, I think you've probably had people ask you this already, but I'll throw it out anyway. You know, there are people who think that we shouldn't tackle these big, broad policy issues in a time when we're in a financial crisis here. Talk to us a little bit about how you see this bill fitting in with the poor economy that we have now.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I think that, you know, truthfully, if we want to get through this economic downturn, if we want an economy that can sustain, any economic recovery package actually has to incorporate affordable health care for everyone into it. I mean, it is the leading cause of foreclosures. It is the leading cause of bankruptcies. And again, in the bankruptcies, over two-thirds of those bankruptcies caused by health care were for individuals that had insurance. I mean, they thought that they were bought into the system and that they had somebody that had their back, only to find out upon an adverse health event that they didn't have the backing that they thought they did. So as we move forward, I mean, I find it a fiscal imperative that we do figure out some way to do this. That said, you know, Mary Catherine Reichert also talked about the need to move this forward now because the feds look to the states for incubators in terms of what they can do to move agenda items, particularly in health care. And Minnesota has long been a leader in health care reform. And so I think it is just the right time to be engaging in these difficult discussions about what it is the people of Minnesota expect from the public sector that we control. And so I'm happy to be here fostering that dialogue.
Senator Erickson-Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lori, to your point you're just making about bringing this up as a way to continue to have dialogue, thank you very much, and thank you for the advocates behind this bill. I think it's critical that we start talking about things that you have mentioned, that we do need comprehensive care in the state of Minnesota and the nation. We pay two times as much for our health care in America than other countries, and we get worse outcomes. According to the World Health Organization, I believe our general rating in terms of other nations in the world is about 37th in the world in terms of general health outcomes. This is not good for paying a lot of money. So there's many things I appreciate about your bill, and I want to take a few of those things off, and then I do have some policy questions. But the fact that we need to be providing comprehensive care, you know, I thank you again for bringing this bill. The fact that you delink it from the place of employment is a key notion that we have to start talking about. And especially with the economy right now, it gives people an opportunity in a way that if the economy was really great, maybe wouldn't be thinking so keenly about the fact that our health care is linked to our place of employment. And if you have a job that provides good health benefits, then good for you. And if you don't, you're probably in the same boat as many people in the state and the country. And we do need to start delinking it from our job, and that means shifting our focus as to where that health care coverage would be sourced then, if not at the job. It is important, and this is also connected then to portability. It shouldn't matter whether you're an Ely or Edina or Eota. You should have access to health care, and right now we have a system that pretty much locks people into networks. And if you're outside your network, you don't have health care coverage. Or you do, but you pay for it out of your own pocket. Unless you happen to have the luxury of time and get pre-authorized and jump through all of those hoops. So we have a system right now where you cannot choose your own doctor, your own hospital, your own clinic to go to. And we're very limited. The insurance companies, insurance plans, are rationing health care right now. They're saying, we'll cover you for this, but we won't cover that. And if you have pre-existing condition, we're not going to cover that. We'll only cover this. And businesses, we heard from the business community, I think many businesses want to provide their employees with good coverage, and they can't afford it. So we are in a system right now that rations health care. And so, again, I applaud your bill. It starts bringing up the concept that we want to move away from a rationed health care system that's limiting people's access, and put it on the table. It should be a right, like education, and you use that. People deserve healthy bodies, healthy mind, and healthy teeth. So it gives us a great platform to start having these conversations as Minnesotans. I do believe, and Senator Higgins was talking about why now, why at a downtime. There's no better time than a crisis to start really working on some serious turns. I think it was the pastor that said it's crucial but not enough, and she talked about being bold. And I'm not sure of my biblical references. Pastor will probably correct me, but I don't know if it was St. John that said, if you're going to sin, sin boldly. And Luther. Whoever said that. Thank you. And I would say the same thing in terms of health care reform. If you're going to do health care reform, do it boldly. So I again, applaud you for that. And you know I'm a health care reform advocate. I really want top to bottom, side to side health care reform. So in that regard, I would say your bill doesn't go far enough. You start with the children, which is a good place to start. It's a tender place to start. But what about their parents? What about the mother that was at the table that needs health care? And I have lots of people in my district, and I'm sure you do too, Senator Laurie, and we all do, working families where the family needs coverage and can't afford it. Senior citizens that need more coverage and can't afford it. If you're a self-employed carpenter, you're not in a pool. Or a farmer, you're not in a pool. Everyone needs health care coverage, comprehensive, affordable access. So, you know, it's a place to start, but it could be years before we get to the general population. And somebody was talking about this. I think it was the mother who was saying she's stuck in the middle. You know, if you're wealthy enough, you can afford it. If you're poor enough, you qualify for public programs. But what about everybody else in the middle? I was just to a healthcare forum in Eagan 2 weeks ago, and that room was filled with maybe 200 or 300 people. They need healthcare right now. So I think your bill has great pieces in it and great objectives. It doesn't go far enough. We need to include everyone as soon as possible. And the questions I have about your bill are related to, I think, Senator Hand's point. It doesn't get at the cost savings. And with other mechanisms and other bills that are out there, I think we can capture cost savings by eliminating the medical middleman, and that's where you capture 30% to 40% of your health care costs, and then you can roll them into better reimbursements and broader coverage. It brings down your costs. We all know about the size of pools. The larger the pool is, if it's 1 million children, fabulous. We can have tremendous power to negotiate down pharmaceutical costs and coverage. But what if there were 7 million people in the same pool? Everyone in the state of Minnesota, the same pool. We'd have enormous power. So I'd like to hear from you about, again, the cost savings piece, because right now we're reaching out to cover everyone, but we're not capturing the cost savings that we need to actually fund the system. And then on the piece on the study in the bill where it goes into study of healthcare costs and putting together some committees, and boy, I just think we have done all the studying we need. The GAO out in Washington just released a report recently that said there was no cost savings, essentially, in medical records and in medical homes and some of those other foundational pieces that we passed last year. The cost savings is in the administrative layer that we need to take out. So I would like to hear from you on
Senator Lori, some of very those briefly things. If you can, because we do have another bill.
Okay, you're right. We do have other bills. I will try to be brief. This bill makes every effort to make it so that in 2 years we do move to universal coverage. I'm talking about every single Minnesotan. And I hope that we really are able to move that forward. I think that starting with kids, you know, as Senator Pretner Solon mentioned, we started a long time ago with everybody over 65. And it's time to move to another group. I think kids is a fantastic place to start. I think the education paradigm works well. You and I have had many discussions about the need and our shared desire to move healthcare forward. And I think this is a huge step that we could take to move healthcare forward in Minnesota. So I appreciate your comments and look forward to continuing to work together.
Senator Lori, Judiciary Committee has requested the bill. I want to, as I told you, I had some concerns, but I appreciate all you and the advocates have done to try and address them. And I really do like the comprehensive benefits and covering all the kids and breaking the link to employers. I think Senator Pretner Solon mentioned the portability when changing jobs. That is very excellent. And I do think that something like this, you would use school nurses more for things like immunizations and so on that you can't use them for now. So appreciate what you've tried to do. And so on. But Judiciary Committee has requested the bill, so that's where the motion should go. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your indulgence. I know I'm already of 1 and 9 in the majority here at the table, and so I have to do my best to make my argument here, even though I don't have the numbers. But I want to address this whole issue of affordability and setting what that rate is. And I think all of us, and I certainly am in agreement with the need to reform health care. I certainly will not tell you that what we have today is the best way, and it does need reform. Now, I think where we may differ is that my direction for reform is about 180 degrees from the direction that you and probably others on this committee are taking, and that's why I'm thankful for your graciousness to allow me to make that point. I think we need to have market reforms, and I want to take this opportunity to gently remind my colleagues here once again that political bodies are not suited to set prices. They never have been. They never will be. Every time it's tried, it has failed. It doesn't work. Pricing is a form of communication, if you will. And when we, through a political process, say, here's what that answer is going to be, when we know nothing of the complexity and detail of it, it is always going to be wrong, and oftentimes with dire consequences. One of my colleagues mentioned the idea of rationing. And every other country that has tried some form of state-managed health care has rationing in much more severe forms than what we experience here. And it's rationing based on the political process making a decision about what is improper utilization. You yourself said that we have to be careful about improper utilization. Well, who's going to decide that? When a government runs it, it'll be a political process that will decide what is proper utilization and what is improper. We talked about affordable. When a government body runs it, there will be a government body that will determine what is affordable and what isn't. It'll be done in a political process. And so even the proponents of this bill, who like the fact that we're going to say it's going to be 5% or maybe it's going to be 6 or 7 or whatever, there's no guarantee there at all. Because the market say that the cost of doing health care will be whatever it is, and we can pass a law saying, well, we're only going to pay for X, and when we do that, the result is rationing. And for us to pass a law to determine pricing of something like this would be about the same as if we decided to pass a law to suspend the gravity periodically whenever we tripped and fell. It doesn't work. It has worked. And so I would encourage us to not pass this bill and to set it aside and to adopt reforms that would make a stronger marketplace and to give people the affordability that we would have if we had a true market. So, Senator Lori, I appreciate your passion for this and others on the committee. I know all of you share that. We have to decide whether or not we are going to have a section of the economy that is going to be governed by a politically planned system or marketplace do that work. And I think it's pretty clear reading history and economics that marketplaces work and political planning does not. Thank you.
Senator Lori moves Senate File 9. As amended, be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Madam Chair,
or
Mr.
Dahl,
Chair, I'm sorry. If I could have just a chance to respond to Senator Hand. I mean, we see it right now in our energy markets. They're regulated. They still get to, they have their monopoly areas. They come in and ask for rate increases when they need it, but they get to make their money. They can do some competition, I guess, to a certain degree in that if they're providing ancillary services. But there's an example where the market is regulated heavily, and I would think that we could do something similar where government has a role to play in health care. I would argue that the business community and the marketplace has been crying out for some relief on health care costs and not coming up with a solution and asking that we as a body come up with some ideas as a collective body to bring our resources together to say what can we do to change the system that we clearly know is not working. And I don't think we're setting any dollar amounts here. I think it's a matter of just setting some goals and saying let's figure out where we go from here. And as far as a political body and setting prices, I argue that even in the marketplace, a lot of politics goes into play in setting prices. And whether we know it or not, it's part of what goes on. It's day to day, and a lot of it's done in secrecy. So at least we're here in the light of day, you know, making some of these decisions and allowing everyone to come to the table to decide where do we go from here. Sort of like I look at this whole problem as kind of like the dog chasing its tail. We just never seem to be able to get at the answer. It's always something else. But I would argue that this is the proper thing, conversation to have, and that we should move it forward and carry that conversation on.
On Senator Lori's motion, further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. Senator
Thank
Berglund.
You, Mr. Chair.
Senator Berglund, Senate File 207, and you have an A1 amendment?
Yes, I'd move adoption of the amendment.
Okay, that's being distributed right now. It's put the bill in the shape this is first committee, the shape the author wants the bill. Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this bill has three purposes in mind. The first is to allow parents with children over 275% of poverty to buy into Minnesota Care at full expense. The second purpose is really to target the majority of the children today that are uninsured but eligible for our programs by taking those families with incomes of 200% of poverty or less and removing the employer barrier, the four-month barrier, and premiums, as well as exempting all children from asset limits. In addition, the bill has several other parts, most of which have already been done in other bills, extending the request of the commissioner to cover self-employed farmers and to cover foster children. This bill goes further to also talk about a juvenile being released from a residential correction facility on their 18th birthday. I'd like to thank a number of organizations that have signed a letter in your packet. AFSCME, Minnesota Nurses, the Children's Defense Fund, SEIU, Education Minnesota, Take Action Minnesota, and Isaiah for their letter of support. And then I'd like to call on two people to briefly testify in behalf of the bill. The first is Dr. Meeches from the Minnesota Medical Association, to be followed by Maureen O'Connell from Legal Services Advocacy Project.
Dr. Meeches, welcome to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Senator Marty, members of the committee. I'm Bob Meeches. I'm a physician, chief executive of the Minnesota Medical Association, representing 11,000 physicians and medical students. We've been working on health care reform for a very long time through our physician plan for Healthy Minnesota and with many in the room on Healthy Minnesota Partnership for Reform. And we've clearly articulated the responsibility of government to help low-income Minnesotans make health care affordable. We believe Senate File 207 is in line with that goal. It specifically focuses on children and low-income families. As represented by Senator Berglund, it removes barriers to access for Minnesota care for children and families below 200% of the federal poverty level by removing the 18-month waiting period if the family had previous access to employer-sponsored coverage, and it waives minimum premiums. It also removes the 4-month waiting period for children coming out of foster care or being released from a juvenile residential facility, and directs the Commissioner of Human Services to provide outreach to families with incomes below 200% of the federal poverty level to encourage enrollment in Minnesota care. We think at the time when we are struggling with an economy, when we are struggling to move forward with the health care reform that so many of us want to see, that this is a well-reasoned solution to move forward at this time, and we support the effort brought forward to ensure all Minnesotans have health care coverage towards universal coverage. We urge your support.
Thank you, Dr. Meeches. Ms. O'Connell.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maureen O'Connell. I'm the Advocacy Director for the Legal Services Advocacy Project. Legal aid represents low-income Minnesotans throughout Minnesota on health care, housing, family, consumer, and government benefit issues. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate File 207. Legal aid supports Senate File 207, which seeks to increase children's enrollment in Minnesota care by reducing barriers and expanding coverage to children with incomes above 275%. While Minnesota has long been a leader in valuing health care coverage for children, we still have nearly 80,000 uninsured children. While recognizing that times are tough, we must continue for the health of our children and communities to invest in children's health. The federal government, with the recent passage of the Children's Health Insurance Program Reauthorization Act of 2009, or CHIPRA, has expanded its commitment to children's health coverage by increasing federal funding for children's health programs and providing the states with flexibility to cover more children. CHIPRA provides the opportunities and funding, but Minnesota must now act to make it a reality. Senate File 207 helps make CHIPRA a reality for Minnesota. Under CHIPRA, if Minnesota enacts 5 out of 8 enrollment and renewal procedures as specified in federal law and increases enrollment of children above the target set by the federal government, the state will receive a federal bonus payment for each extra child enrolled to help defray the cost. The size of the bonus payment can vary from 15% to 62.5% of the average cost to a state of covering a child, depending upon the extent by which a state exceeds the target set by the federal government. Senate File 207 and the amendments Senator Berglund has brought today will help Minnesota meet the two CHIPRA requirements by simplifying enrollment and renewal procedures and increasing children's enrollment. For these reasons, we support the bill and urge committee members to also support the bill.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connell. Are there questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak with concerns about the bill? Senator Berglund, does this bill have to go anywhere before your committee?
No, I would move that Senate File 207 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Can I ask a question? Senator Berglund, do you have an estimate of what the cost of this change would be?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, no, I don't, and I've been asking for it since last November.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, just to refresh my memory, what is 275% of the federal poverty guideline? What is that dollar amount, roughly?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, depends on how many people are in the family.
And Mr. Chairman, is there some...
For family of four,
family of four,
about 55.
55. There's a number on the bottom of page one that says not eligible for Minnesota Care if their gross income exceeds $57,500. Is that related at all?
That's the cap, regardless of family size.
So does that mean that even if the 275% is greater than that, they would then not be eligible? If
yes.
That,
okay. But under this bill, they would be able to buy in at full cost without subsidy.
Okay. Further discussion on the bill? If not, Senator Berglund moves Senate File 207 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Berglund. Senator Bonhoff, really moving fast now. Sir Bonhoff, you have a delete everything amendment, and this is the first committee for the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So that's an author's amendment. Any discussion? Senator Pretner Solon moves the A2 delete everything amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wishes. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Bonhoff, welcome to this committee. I don't think you've been here yet this year.
Mr. Chair, I've never been to this committee, and this is my fourth year in the legislature, so it's good to be
about
here.
Time.
Hello, members. Mr. Chair, I had been, just to give you some background with regard to this bill, I had been at a gathering over the holidays with some folks, and we were talking about the terrible unemployment situation, and I had some people who were there who I knew quite well who had lost their jobs, and they talked about the biggest concern they were facing was losing their medical insurance. And then it became kind of a broader discussion, and people were just brainstorming, and they were saying, well, we should find a way to have, when you get unemployment insurance, that you get medical insurance. And so I started researching this, and shortly thereafter, I was reading the Star Tribune and saw that Representative Thiessen had written an article on the very same subject, and he had suggested that he was going to put forward a proposal to do that. I looked into that proposal and discovered that while we were in agreement in theory that I thought that Representative Thiessen was missing an important component of that bill, and that was how the heck would you pay for it? So what we've done, because, Mr. Chair, and I say this in all seriousness, you know, I think it is very important that anything we do this session to take care of those who are in need does not supplant the efforts that we are already making to take care of those who have been long suffering of conditions of poverty, homelessness. And so it is the intent of this bill to offer a solution for those people who find themselves temporarily unemployed due to this economic environment without hurting the overall, I would say, security of the Minnesota care system. So to just take you through this bill, and I would ask Mr. Nelson to join me at the table so that he can be available to discuss it and to answer questions as well. But this Senate File number 347 establishes a temporary Minnesota care coverage for individuals who have been laid off. The way that we pay for this is that the bill deducts a certain percentage from the unemployment benefit received from the individual and deposits that amount in a workforce health coverage account. And I would acknowledge the work of Mr. Nelson for helping create this solution to this problem. Then the cost of the temporary Minnesota care coverage is to be paid from this account. We have very specifically stated who is eligible, and without going through section by section, let me tell you that you have to, number one, qualify for unemployment insurance and so be subject to the very requirements that anyone seeking unemployment insurance would be subject to. Number two, you are not eligible to receive medical insurance through your spouse. So, you know, many people who are uninsured, their spouse gets insurance through their employer. This would not cover them. And as we all know, the current stimulus package has some pretty significant benefits to offset the steep COBRA costs. If you are receiving those benefits, that would also make you ineligible for receiving this benefit. So rather than go through the whole bill section by section, I think I will ask Mr. Nelson to say some things about the bill and then stand for questions.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. I will just say that Senator Bonhoff approached us some time ago and indicated that she wish to provide health care coverage to unemployed workers who don't have anything else available to them. And we work with her in assisting her in drafting this bill. And the thought is that an individual who would be applying for unemployment benefits, currently 85% of everyone who applies for unemployment benefits does so online. I'll just explain the online process quickly. And what they would do, one of the questions we would simply insert on the whole long questionnaire is, would you like to receive health care coverage and a certain portion of your weekly benefits will be reduced to help pay for the cost of this? And if the person indicates yes, then we would ask a series of questions, obtaining all that information at the time the application is filed. Then department would immediately transfer that information to the Department of Human Services. But, of course, we already know who's eligible because if they meet the criteria, they're already eligible. So we essentially know that. But then it would be up to the Department of Human Services to inform people, you meet the criteria, and here is essentially what's all available, and enroll you into the program. We have spoken with Human Services about this. They work with us on drafting this bill. We tried to keep it very simple, so that there aren't a lot of restrictions and that it's very difficult to figure out who's entitled. But it's essentially people who are laid off due to lack of work. It's a permanent layoff. It's not simply a temporary one or a seasonal layoff. They essentially will lose their job. They are a dislocated worker. They don't have other health care coverage available. And they could seamlessly move into this very, very quickly. We would have the information instantaneously once they apply for benefits available to the Commissioner of Human Services, who would then notify the individuals of their entitlement. Human Services, like I say, they want to work with us on it. It's a five-month program. They're the ones who suggested that it be a five-month program starting the first day of the month following the application, so it fits right within their processes. So it would be the this would not be from the Department of Employment and Economic Development standpoint. Once the application process is in place, it would not cost the department there would be almost no administrative costs in doing it once it's set up. It would take a little setup cost, but those costs would be very reasonable, and we wouldn't even be asking for any additional funds to be able to set this up from the department's Department of Employment and Economic Development standpoint. We would not be asking for any administrative funds.
And Mr. Chair, just a couple other additional points. So this coverage is fee-for-service coverage. The given this is just a five-month short-term fix, we are not insisting that they go into a managed care program. The funds would be used, the funds that are accumulating in this account would be used to pay for the care that is rendered. In addition, we are proposing a small surcharge on the unemployment tax of the businesses so that this account would receive funds from both of those two areas. And we have heard that, in fact, we think that will be plenty to cover this particular subset, particularly given the new stimulus money.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Bonner, for bringing this bill. It's a gap where we can provide some service, I think, to our working families in Minnesota. I would imagine you maybe heard some of the discussion we had earlier about trying to get affordable health care coverage to people, and I'm pretty sure you're supportive of that. I'd just like to point out to people that the idea that Senator Bonhoff has brought is it's going to be delivered through the state, right, by the department, and from taxes collected from paychecks, correct?
Two ways. It's going to be delivered. The funding mechanism is 10% of the person who's collecting their unemployment check, 10% of their check goes into this account. So there's a contribution of the employee, as well as the businesses currently do pay into unemployment insurance. There's a surcharge on that.
Okay, right. So, and Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, it's real similar to some of the payment mechanisms and structures that we're talking about with the Children's Fund, creating a single-payer mechanism. And I think here you're just targeted another group of people that would benefit from that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonhoeff, I have an amendment that I'd like to suggest. It's the A3 amendment. Would this be an appropriate time, Mr. Chair?
Would be if somebody has the amendment. Do you have the amendment? Okay. Yes, this would be an appropriate time for an amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoeff, this idea comes from some of the community meetings that were held across the state in terms of what can we do to help Minnesota families during this particularly challenging time. And what attracted me to your bill was this opportunity to provide some help for unemployed workers. And what the A3 amendment does is it speaks to individuals who are currently unemployed and provides currently you can be working, you can be having some sort of employment, and part of those earnings are deducted from your weekly unemployment benefit amount. And what the A3 amendment does on lines 1.10 is it specifies for amounts in excess of $200. And so, in essence, what this does is it provides an opportunity for Minnesota families to have up to an additional $200 for their family for that given week, assuming that they were able to garner work that would equate to $200 or less that week. And as I thought about this and visited with families, I do think that there are a number of Minnesotans, they are interested, they do want to work. They want gainful employment. They want to be able to pay their mortgage. They want to be able to buy food and put food on their table for their children. And as generous as the full unemployment benefits may or may not be, there are an inordinate number of Minnesota families out there that are hurting right now. And the unemployment benefits that are currently available are being stretched in ways that they haven't ever been stretched before. And so I just throw this out there as a tool that we might be able to use to show an additional way of offering some support for those families.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, I'm going to let Mr. Nelson respond first. One of the questions I had was, is the section that you are referring to in statute, that is not the section of statute we're addressing here, correct?
Right. It's not.
It's not. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Lynch, as to your bill, as we spoke a few moments ago, the bill will impact tens of thousands of individuals who are currently collecting unemployment benefits or, in fact, working part-time. And I'm just trying to think of changes were made in the current statute in 2007. And we did look at some of these, the kind of suggestion being brought forward. I can just point out the increased unemployment benefit costs would be literally hundreds of millions of dollars per year in increased unemployment benefit costs, which, of course, are borne by employers, which means literally that much more in unemployment taxes from employers. At a time, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund is scheduled to go into deficit. It may, in fact, go into deficit status within a month for a short time. Then after first quarter receipts, it will go into permanent deficit, and I say permanent, all the way predicted through 2013, starting in December. It will be $1.5 billion in deficit in 2011. That's the current projections. This bill would increase that substantially.
Mr. Chair,
Can I express... The current maximum benefit amount, regular benefits, is $566. There's a federal supplement on top of that of $25. So the current maximum is $591. Currently, any person who receives an unemployment benefit check, whether it be for a dollar, would receive a $25 federal supplement over the next year. That's the current. As to... this is the first I've seen of this particular amendment. We'd have to do an analysis, but I can assure this committee the cost would be hundreds of millions of dollars per year in increased unemployment benefit costs, and thus on to employers at a time the Unemployment Trust Fund is already going into serious deficits.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, I'm on the Unemployment Insurance Commission, and we met all during the interim going over various options to make sure the most amount of people were covered, and we actually have people on this Unemployment Insurance Commission from labor, from business, from the legal community. In fact, somebody from labor, Mr. Leto, is prepared to testify today on behalf of this bill. But so this, I would not welcome this as an amendment today on this bill, because I don't think then I could move forward with this. I think it would be too heavy because it hasn't been vetted. We haven't looked at what the cost is. And I'm actually carrying the larger bill for Unemployment Insurance Commission. I'd be happy to talk to you offline and work with Mr. Nelson and see if there's anything that could be done that would address some of your concerns. Given that it hasn't been run by the commission, I don't know that that could happen this quickly, but I think we are all sensitive to the rising unemployment, and we have to do what we can for these families.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, let me be clear here that my motivation behind offering this amendment is to help Minnesota families. That's it. That's it. And so while I am cognizant and understanding of the unemployment account, certainly, the suggestion that $25 of additional federal stimulus is a breath of fresh air to those Minnesota families that are unemployed, I am here to tell you it's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the bucket for those families. It's a drop in the bucket for those families today, and I think for a time that's much longer than any of us care to fathom. Senator Bonoff, I'll withdraw the A3 amendment, but I very much am interested in working with you on your other bill with regard to this, and I think that it is important as we move forward as a legislative body that we remember what it is. One of the very tenets that we talked about from the first weeks we walked in here was, what can we do this session to minimize the hurt to Minnesota families? We must not lose sight of that, and it is very easy to do in these halls.
So Senator Lynch is withdrawing the A3 amendment. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank Senator Bonhoff for working hard to find a way to pay for her bill. And after Mr. Leto gets done testifying, I'd like to move it for her.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Leto, and I know Ms. McMullen would like to testify as well. Mr. Leto, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and then Senators. Brad Leto from the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the Chief of Staff. Just to let you, our board hasn't officially taken a position, although we have talked to board members and the executive officers of the AFL-CIO, and this is the Senate File 347, and the amended version especially is the type of bill that we definitely would support, especially since it is voluntary for the unemployed worker, if they don't have access to any other type of health care. And it does have the funding mechanism in it as well. And at this time in society where so many people are unemployed, and in fact there is, I forgot to bring it, but there is a poll done in January from Peter Hart pollsters nationally that talked to unemployed, and it was 32 to 35%. I can't remember the exact number of people that are unemployed, getting unemployed right now, are losing their health care. Now, some of those people are going to be eligible for the 65% of COBRA. Some have spouses with health care. And so, knowing exactly what percentage of that those folks are going to be able to take advantage of such a program as this, I don't know. But it certainly will help. And I know it's a limited program of 5 months, but it's anything will help these folks right now, especially if they have families and they don't have health care. And actually, in some cases, both spouses are losing their jobs, in a lot of cases nowadays. So we would support it, and thank Senator Bonoff for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Mr. Leto, do you know how many people who are on unemployment compensation take up COBRA? I mean, how many can afford COBRA?
Mr. Chair, I don't. I may have some studies back in my office. I know that actually one of the, that it's a number of probably, it's actually probably a number of very well-paid or union positions, actually. And in some cases, some of the building trades actually pay a percentage. And this COBRA will be allowed to do that, so they'll be able to pay a lot more the percentage with this and their funds for insurance. But I don't know, but I know there were, certainly a number of probably some union workers as well as the general populace, there's a lot of folks that end up not having anything. But I don't have numbers. I'll look and see if I have some studies back in my office.
And, Mr. Chair, you know, we all know that COBRA is very expensive for almost anyone. I know when my oldest son fell off, you know, being able to get my insurance, his first COBRA bills were like 600 some a month. And the thing that's now, yes, we've got the federal stimulus that will cover 65% of that, but one of the conditions is you have to be laid off from an ongoing concern. And a lot of the cases, these people are being laid off from companies that go under. And so that's kind of the safety net group we're trying to reach here.
Thank you. Ms. McMullen wanted to testify as well. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you. Before the witness leave the table, I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recently learned about something that I didn't know and would like to know how this bill will support these union members. A constituent of mine who is a long-term union member has lost her job, you know, here and there, and has been unemployed for short periods of time, but this time she's been out of a job for quite some time. And apparently, if she goes in unemployment, she will be put at the bottom of the list when jobs become available. So she's basically forced to be in, really, without a job, without an income. She cannot claim unemployment. And how would that help? How would this bill help her? Is this a typical situation for union members that cannot? So again, the situation is she's unemployed. If she collects unemployment, she will be put at the bottom of the list when employment becomes available. So she, right now, is basically surviving on her savings, and she's under COBRA. How would this situation help her?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray. I don't think it would, unfortunately, but I'm not quite sure of the, I guess, situation. I could certainly talk to you further about it, but I'm wondering, it probably is a seniority situation. I'm not sure, I guess, of the exact situation, or it's not through an agency or anything, is it? A temporary job? Okay.
No.
Okay.
So this is not a typical situation where union members could not enroll, you know, could not get.
Not to my knowledge, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Senator Torres Ray. Not to my knowledge, I'd certainly be happy to talk to further and to find out exactly what's.
So for the majority of the union members, they will be able to collect unemployment and receive this benefit.
If they've been laid off, I'm wondering also if it might be, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if it might be a shared work program or something that they may be in too. I don't know, because I know actually in the Senate Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee today, they didn't get to it, but there was a shared work bill as well that might help them. I guess I'm just not sure. This doesn't sound like a typical situation, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that this is not a typical situation, because if we have a large number of people. This is a great bill, Senator Bonoff, and so many people need it. But I want to make sure, you know, that it will protect some of these very people that have been working and really need our support. And for their circumstances, they might not be able to collect unemployment.
Ms. McMullen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth McMullen, and I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. I wasn't intending on testifying on this bill. I apologize to Senator Bonoff that I hadn't seen her language for her amendment. I am the health policy director for the Business Partnership, but I saw in here the unemployment surcharge, and just wanted to note for the record that I'd like to take this back to our tax folks and have them take a look at it. As an additional cost to businesses. With that said, I will say that I agree with what's been said, that COBRA is a very expensive benefit for folks who find themselves out of work. A number of, you know, some companies are able to offer extended
health benefits when they do lay folks off, and their employers don't want to just send folks out and with nothing, because health coverage is important. I also want to note that just for something for the health policy to consider is looking at ways of keeping folks in the private sector is a benefit to everyone who's receiving coverage, and to encourage folks to look to the individual market when they find themselves laid off, that there might be, depending on circumstances, there might be affordable options for them in the private market. So I don't have extensive comments because I wasn't prepared to testify.
Thank you, Ms. McMullen. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. McMullen, part of the problem with the individual market, though, is that people get underwritten. And so oftentimes you can't get that coverage. And whereas if you're in an employer group benefit, you can get the coverage. And so it's really a drawback of the individual market. And if you have to go on MSHA, it's very, very expensive also.
Mr. Chair, I should have mentioned that we will work with Senator Bonoff. She said that she's considering some changes to this. So we will work with her on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Is there anyone else? Mr. Hickey, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We're the state's largest business group in terms of entities with about 13,000 members. I have had a few conversations with Senator Bonoff about it, and I certainly understand the goal we're trying to achieve here, but about a $50 increase per employee in the dislocated worker fee is going to be a pretty bitter pill for businesses to swallow in an economy this bad. And I appreciate the fact that employees are contributing too. But that is just too much, and that is.
I'm gonna
take it down. Oh, okay. To.
0.2.
Okay, to 0.2. Okay. Okay. Well, that will help. But based on the 0.3, and so I don't know what that does to it, if that makes it $40 or whatever, but there are businesses that are just barely hanging on, and you know that from who you see in your neighborhood and what you're hearing. And anything above and beyond what they're already paying is going to be very difficult. And I'd urge you to try to find another way to finance this. And we do appreciate that employees are contributing some amount. And thanks for the time.
And, Mr. Chair, just for the record, I, too, thought that it was a little bit hefty in terms of the amount once we heard about the stimulus package, because all we're trying to do is get enough in the fund to cover the costs. And so I think Ms. Kavner even thought that perhaps now we had more raised than we needed, and so we are going to go back and lower that amount before we get to our next committee. I didn't think that that would be the purview of this committee, so we didn't make that change yet.
Thank you, and I believe this goes to business, industry, and
jobs.
I'll
make the motion.
Senator Berglund moves Senate File 347 as amended be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Business, Jobs, and Industry. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
And with that, we've finished the afternoon agenda. We'll be recessing until 5:30 tonight. Committee members, there will be pizza here if you get here about 5:15 or so. With that, this meeting is in recess.